we're starting. This is a new chapter, right? Okay, so now we're dealing with... It's a good thing. Devotion is the prominent thing, not being in key. I think if this was a music school, they'd all be shocked. Okay. So now we've gone through the nature of the jiva in general, then the nature of the conditioned soul, the position of the conditioned soul. Now we're talking about the liberated soul. Right? It means how the soul becomes liberated, right? Like that. So, okay, does that make we understand why these three? One is the actual nature of the jiva, so how he can be in either place, conditioned or not conditioned. In the same time as then the position of the soul's condition and the position of one who is in the process of liberating himself and how he does that, right, and what he'll obtain. So he'll come back to the original description of what is the nature of the jiva. So chapter 8. The jiva's liberation from maya. Though the jiva, overcome by maya, is bound by the chains of beginningless impressions and karma, he does not lose his marginal form and quality. Though the influence of maya is strong and the inherent consciousness of being the servant of Krishna is weak, it still remains intact. Given the opportunity, his real nature will gradually manifest. The opportunity is provided by the saintly devotees of the Lord. So, in other words, this point of eternal damnation does not apply. Like that. It means the eternal damnation is being in the material world. Right? Whatever the position, pious, impious, just you're away from Krishna. So the inherent nature of the soul as the marginal potency, that doesn't change even though one is under the influence of maya. And it's natural for that living entity to take up Krishna consciousness. Right? Does that make sense? So that's very important to understand. Otherwise, there's a tendency to apply as we discussed before, these elements of where the consciousness is polluted by ignorance or passion, where we will think that either someone's the body or that there is the element of, that they perform the activities, but they're going to always be bound by them. You know what I'm saying? It means you have the many philosophies, they have the idea that once you've performed a sinful activity, then there's no way you can improve that. You know what I'm saying? At the same time, as they say, if you surrender to God, then that all corrects itself. So then that means that it doesn't matter what one does, one could correct oneself by surrendering to God. Sometimes they'll apply that, sometimes they won't. Right? So there's not necessarily a consistency. Right, the consistency of application will generally depend upon the individual person who's interpreting the philosophy and its application. Right? So someone who's more broad-minded will be more liberal in their application. Someone who's not will be more narrow-minded. Does that make sense? Thus the Svetasvatara Upanishad says, the meaning of the Vedas is revealed to the person who has devotion to the Guru as he has pure devotion for the Supreme Lord. Svetasvatara Upanishad 6.23. Right, so as you have for the Lord, you should have for the spiritual master. When both of those are there, then the meaning of the Vedas is revealed. Right? This is a very important element. Because otherwise, then, if that kind of faith is not there, then many things won't be revealed. So if people doubt, you know, Prabhupada and his teachings, they actually won't be able to understand the Shastra. Right? Even though they're maybe very intelligent, they won't be able to understand. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita it is said, There are unlimited conditioned souls who are bereft of Lord Krishna's service. Not knowing how to cross the ocean of nescience, they are scattered by waves, time, and tide. However, since some are fortunate to contact devotees, and by this contact they are delivered from the ocean of nescience, just as log floating down a river accidentally washes upon the bank. By good fortune, one becomes eligible to cross the ocean of nescience, and when one's term of material existence decreases, one may get an opportunity to associate with pure devotees. By such association, one's attraction to Krishna is awakened. Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila, 22, chapter 22, 43 and 45. The verdict of all revealed scriptures is that by even a moment's association with a pure devotee, one can attain all success. Madhya Lila 22:54. One is immediately freed from the clutches of Maya if he seriously and sincerely says, "My dear Lord Krishna, although I have forgotten you for so many long years in the material world, today I am surrendering unto you. I am a sincere and serious servant. Please engage me in your service." Madhya Lila 22:33. When, by destiny, bhagya, a person's entanglement in Maya decreases, he becomes qualified for association of devotees. One may ask concerning this statement, what is destiny? If destiny is the cause of destruction of samsara, then how can one say that faith or association with devotees is the cause? Destiny is, moreover, a blind or impersonal factor. If that is the sole cause of auspiciousness for the jiva, then the jiva will have no inclination to initiate his own attempts. Though it is easy to reason in this matter, it brings about a lot of difficulty in the end. To find the real truth, it is necessary to examine the basic tendency of the jiva. Right? So in other words, he's saying by great fortune, he comes in contact with the devotees, takes up the devotional process. Now if we say that, so it's just dependent upon good fortune, then the tendency would be the jiva will just sit around and wait for that good fortune to happen. He won't make any endeavor. Right? So we have to find the actual balance here. So you have to look at the nature of the jiva to understand this. So then he continues. When the jiva's nature, swabhava, is formed, the only doer or responsible being is the Supreme Lord. No one else exists. Free will or independence is implicit with formation of anything spiritual. The real relation to the Creator remains only in the creation itself. Right? In other words, Krishna creates something, but in that creation, the inherent free will on the spiritual platform is there. So the only connection with Krishna is the creative process, that you are connected to Him. But after that is free will. Right, just like the parents, your connection with your parents is they have created the body that you live in, but you're still an independent being. So your relationship depends upon you acting within that relationship or not. Does that make sense? Same principle. The jiva equipped with full independence first becomes either favorable or adverse to the Lord. This is the first act of the jiva. In that, the jiva is the prime doer. Okay, so then in creating the jiva, Krishna is fully responsible. Having created them, then whether the jiva is going to serve Krishna or not, that's fully the jiva's responsibility because they're independent. At the time of that activity, the Lord is only the accompanying doer. In that he gives the results to the jiva's activities. Having entered ignorance, the material world, the doers become threefold. So the Lord is there along with that. He is an accompanying doer. In other words, the jiva does something, but because it's God's creation, the creation then responds and gives you the result you're looking for through his direction. Right? But still, it's depending upon what you do. Does that make sense? So Krishna's making all the arrangements based on our interests. How we are looking to apply our independence is how then Krishna then reciprocates by creating that facility for us. Does that make sense? That's the principle. Okay? Does that make sense?
Yes.
When a Jiva's nature, swabhava, is formed. It is eternal, but see, it's just like the principle of Chaitanya Charitamrita. In the beginning, then Krishna is one. Then he expands as two, and now as Lord Chaitanya, he has become one again. Right? So it is that principle of you're dealing with eternity, so the Jiva is always there, but then that at the same time is that Jiva is manifest. You know what I'm saying? Vaikuntha planets are expanding unlimitedly at every moment. That means they're manifesting more and more of these Vaikuntha planets. You know what I'm saying? But at the same time as they're eternal, so they were always there. See, this is why there is a limit to how much we can understand God. Right? Like that. Does that make sense? So up to a point that we understand that he's God, not us, that much we can understand. But actually his position is God, that we can't understand because we're not God. Does that make sense? We understand what we appreciate about God, but we can't understand everything about him. Does that make sense? Okay. Having entered ignorance, the material realm, the doers become threefold. Okay, so we had before is that Krishna is the doer when it comes to the creation. Forming the nature of the jiva. The jiva being independent means independence being inherent in that formation. Then the jiva can apply that independence either to serve Krishna or not. On that he's the doer. Then once he makes his choice, then Krishna is the accompanying doer. Right? And then facilitates whichever direction he wants to go. Right? Now if the jiva chooses ignorance, then now we're dealing with three doers. Right? So this is one, the jiva becomes the prime doer for all activities. Right? Because it's what he wants, so that's the movie we're going. Two, matter, which assists the jiva, becomes the secondary doer. And three, the Lord in giving the fruits becomes the associated doer. Right? So that means the jiva wants something, so he's the actual primary factor in it. The material energy then through the modes then actually makes it happen, because the jiva is very small. It would be very difficult for the jiva to make it happen. But the Lord is the associated doer in that it's his energy and his rules, but it runs independently. So technically he's not responsible. But he's a doer in that it's his energy and it works according to his rules and he gives the fruits. Right? Depending upon your identity, depending upon your activity, right, then you're going to get a result. So that's given by Krishna. But your identity, what you'll do, that's based on the jiva and his engaging the material energy. Does that make sense? Then the result, that will come by Krishna.
So when you choose to serve Krishna, then Krishna, you're just dealing with yourself and Krishna, just two doers. The third one only comes into play when you...
The third. The third here is matter, which assists the jiva. So there it'll be, this is Mahamaya means, so there it'll be Yogamaya.
Okay. So then, because it's more like direct with Krishna, you're just dealing with the first two and not the third one. The third one just...
No, the third one's the Lord.
But because he's giving results, because you're desiring for yourself instead of just desiring to surrender to Krishna, when you get to the point of pure surrender, you're just dealing with directly.
What's the importance?
Oh, I just wondered whether if because there's like the jiva by any of his choice of serving Krishna or not, and then Krishna assists by assisting the jiva in either facilitating
One or the other, yes. Means in the one, he puts them in contact with the material energy, which will then be the secondary doer and get things done. But still, he's the one that awards the results. But in the spiritual world, then you come in contact with the internal potency. So then that would be, you could say, in that way, then going. But we'll see later on if he gives more technical detail. Because this arrangement is for understanding how the material energy works. There will be some, the principle is the same. There's still chit, achit, and ishwara, right? But now the achit is not there anymore, so you're dealing with this transcendental world. So then we become the servant. Here we're the servant of this matter. Therefore we identify as matter and we become the field, right? So Kshetrajna understands that he's not the field. So then you start dealing with Krishna and his energy. So you're still servant of the energy, but now you're servant of the internal potency as opposed to the external. Does that make sense? So those principles stay in place. Exact. Now, words that will be used and definitions, that we have to see how that's going to come up. Is that okay? Though the jiva, by his free will, has become overcome by ignorance, he does not lose his responsibility as the prime doer. That means even though you're in ignorance and don't really know what you're doing, you're still responsible because you're the primary doer. Right? You can't say that because I didn't know that the fire was hot, therefore I shouldn't get burnt. Right? You know, God does not have to put on fire that, you know, you may get burnt if you touch this, you know, otherwise you can sue him, right? No, it doesn't work like that. Whatever actions the jiva performs after entering the material world are called destiny or bhagya when they begin to yield their reactions, right? Right. Whatever actions the jiva performs, they're called destiny or bhagya when they begin to yield their reactions. In other words, the jiva performs an activity, when the fruit is coming, that's called destiny or bhagya, his fortune. Right? So it's good work, good fortune. Bad work, bad fortune. Right? So is that clear?
So if we have expressions of happiness, we should think that that's from some past connection and distress.
Yeah. Yeah. So good or bad that comes, then we understand this just from previous activity. So I don't get too overwhelmed either way. You know, getting too excited, you know, in either way. Because excitement then gives rise to further action. Right? Because action, excitement, therefore, you're dealing with prajumna. Right? Interest, desire. So then that, the greater the excitement, the greater the enthusiasm, therefore, to perform activities and get more result. That's why you shouldn't be too excited about any reaction of the material energy. Otherwise, you can get yourself entangled more in it. That's why if it's happy, it's nice, but you don't get elated. And if it's not nice, then you don't become too distraught. Because then you get entangled in it. You just take it further. It only has to go so far, you'll take it more. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. You sit tight and you stay philosophical.
Yeah, it means you try to stay even equipoised. So, therefore, happiness, distress, you're not disturbed. If it's happy, nice. If it's not happy, hey, it happens. You know, it's the same thing. Just like happiness comes, you didn't ask for it, so distress comes without asking for it. Seemingly not asking for it. We've done the activity that we got it, so. But because it's coming later, we don't necessarily make the connection. You know what I'm saying? You go to a restaurant, you order something, it comes after 20 minutes, it's obvious that you are the doer and now that destiny has arrived due to your previous action. You make the order and then 6 months later it shows up, you know, at your house, then you don't make the connection. You know what I'm saying? That. So then you wonder, you know, why I'm having this, why this predestiny, and, you know, I don't want Chinese, you know, like that. So then, you know, it's a problem. Yeah. Does that make sense? Okay, anything else? The destinies of an atheist and religious person are not judged in the same way. According to the actions of the jiva, the particular results are given. The results of action are of two types, material and spiritual. Though action motivated by material gain, a person receives material results. Through actions aiming for spiritual goals, a person develops a spiritual result. All actions performed with spiritual intention, such as service to devotees, chanting the name of the Lord and service to the Lord, are spiritual. Right? In other words, they don't give the same result. It may be seemingly the same activity, but one is doing it to please Krishna, while the other is doing it for material gain. So therefore, they get different results. Both are cooking, but they get different results in all that. Okay, does that make sense? So, service to the devotees, chanting the name, and service to the Lord, those are spiritual. Like that. And so then, other things then they're giving will give a material result. Right? Now, we're not talking about the material result, meaning that you got something observable made out of material energy. We mean is, what result do you get from it? It means an action done in polluted consciousness binds you to the material nature. The same action done to please Krishna frees you from the material nature. But the observable result is the same. Right? Does that make sense? I boil a potato. Right? So then, at the end of this, then it's offered to Krishna. Eating that, then we're freed from the result. From material contamination. The same potato being boiled, then we just eat it for ourselves, then we get bound to material energy. But the action of boiling the potato got the same result, a boiled potato. And the same result of cooking, of eating, got the same result of, you know, getting rid of the hunger. So the material action and reaction still remains the same. What changes is, does it give a spiritual or a material result? See, this is why we have to be able to deal with a few different things at once. Does that make sense? It means we're given this philosophy of Chinta-Bheda-Bheda-Tattva because we need to use it. Right? Because otherwise we look at, oh, it's a spiritual, that means it must be good. Right? Because we equate religion as ritual, and ritual is connected with karma. Right? The rituals are connected with the karma aspect of the Vedic literatures. So then that means it gets you a pious result. So if I'm performing devotional activities, then it must give me a pious material result. It must be good. Right? That's how we are conditioned to think. But as we pointed out, is the action is going to get you the same result whether you're engaging spiritually or materially. But the point is that the result of that action is going to take you back to Godhead or not. Right? You've done something in your last life that you would be in an unfortunate situation. So acting in your regular Krishna consciousness, you end up in an unfortunate situation. So the result is the same. Now you can either remember Krishna and use it to advantage to further your Krishna consciousness, or you can get overwhelmed in lamentation and therefore get bound up by material energy. Does that make sense? So you have these dual things happening at once. Is the connection to Krishna or not? Then there's the proper performance of the activity. Right? So the ultimate sambandha abhideya prayojana is it's connected to Krishna. Then the secondary is that the sambandha abhideya and prayojana are correct according to the particular action and result that you're looking for. So that combination then of those two is what we're talking about in buddhi yoga. right? Perform proper performance of your duty, right? With knowledge, right? So there's your knowledge and skills, right? Does that make sense? But it, depending upon what it is that you, why you're doing that, what's your motive behind that, then that's going to give you your values. It's either going to give you Krishna, or it's going to take you away. So these two things are happening at once. The spiritual, material nature of something is one thing, and then the proper operation of the material energy is the secondary thing. Now, if the motive is to do it for Krishna, even if it's operated badly, if it's actually sincere, then one aspect of it, then devotionally it's fine. But at the same time, you do have the element, and since it's for Krishna, we should know what we're doing. You know what I'm saying? And it's just like this. If you're cooking for yourself, then you put together whatever you cook. If we say, okay, tomorrow you're cooking for the deities, then there's a tendency is that, well, you could just go in there and just do whatever, you know, this and that. You don't know anything, and just the sincerity is enough. Okay, one time, two times, but at some point, shouldn't you make an endeavor, since the result of this cooking activity is for Krishna? Wouldn't you want it to come out good? So you should be making an endeavor to develop your skills. Does that make sense? So the two go together, right? The internal and the external are connected, right? All external activity is based on an internal purpose. The subtle always expands into the gross, right? Or you can say the gross is an expansion of the subtle. Does that make sense? It's the same principle. So this thing of that, you know, we're going to have the sophistication of devotional activities of, you know, 1960s or early 70s, you know, ISKCON. But we're going to be, you know, when it comes to our material activities, we're going to be up to date, you know, November 2008. That doesn't match. You know what I'm saying? Because you become sophisticated and you've developed. But for who? Right? So if you can't take that sophistication and connect it to Krishna, then what's it going to do for you? It's not going to take you back to Godhead. If you can connect that to Krishna, then it goes. But then that means that that development, that sophistication has to be applied, therefore, now into that understanding and application of the philosophy. Right? Otherwise, how do you apply the simple philosophy applies to a simple activity? The complex aspects of the philosophy apply to complex aspects of the activity. Right? If it's just, we just chant Hare Krishna and that's all we do, chant, dance, take prasad, then that's all the more is the philosophy and that's all the more our activity, it matches. But if our philosophy, chant, dance, take prasad, and then after that, then we have our jobs, we have our positions in society, we have, you know, so many responsibilities and all that, then they don't match. So you have to be able to connect whatever that sophistication back to chanting, dancing, and taking prasad. Does this make sense? So this dual thing here, the jiva is the prime doer and the matter is the secondary doer, that must always be taken into consideration. And the Lord, then the associated, simply because it's his energy. It's going to work according to his direction anyway. It can't act separately. Just as the jiva can't act separately, material energy can't act separately. But Krishna is going to let it run according to the nature of, I mean, the need of the living entity. You know what I'm saying? Because for Krishna, it's his energy. So there's nothing for him to gain out of that energy other than the interaction based on devotion. That's the only thing that's of interest to him. Otherwise, these other things, we take it as important, he doesn't. Right? You know, an elephant comes and sits on your Mercedes. We have a problem. Krishna doesn't have a problem. Because the manifestation and transformation of his energy, that's not what he gets a taste out of. We do, because we identify with it. Krishna is the rasa. Therefore, that rasa, which is the main thing that you want to do, but it's still, it's manifest through these secondary applications. Right? The love Mother Jashoda has for Krishna, that is the prime element. But the secondary element is she manifests that through cooking for Krishna, making nice clothes and ornaments for Krishna, seeing that he goes to bed and, you know, gets his rest, waking him up in the morning, seeing that he gets, you know, properly bathed and dressed, you know, seeing that he goes, when he goes to the forest, that they send nice lunch to him and all these different things. Does that make sense? So that's the skills. But those are manifest because of the primary aspect of that particular love, right? Just like before, we're discussing the elements of bhava, is because of the sthayi bhav, therefore all the other bhavas manifest. You change the sthayi bhav, then you change the medium through which the others manifest. Does that make sense? It's the same principle, it always applies. Yes.
What is sthayi bhav?
Sthayi bhav. Sthayi bhav is your inherent relationship with Krishna. Like Mother Jashoda's sthayi bhav is parental rasa. You know, the cowherd boys, that's the shakya rasa. That's sthayi bhav. That's fixed. Sthayi means fixed. The other aspects of bhava, then they'll come and go according to the situation. Like that. Does that make sense?
At what point
does
the sthayi bhava become revealed?
Later. After we get farther on in this chapter. When it's situated in the previous chapter, then it takes a while. But if you take seriously what is being explained in this chapter, then it happens very soon. Okay? Because this is technically, see, you have, this is the process of becoming liberated, so it's the bhagya jeev. Sometimes he'll give these three sections as the mukya jeev, the bada jeev, and the bhagya jeev. But the mukya jeev is the natural inherent nature of the living entity. So that's generic. But it can also be described that that's the position that the jeeva should be in. And that's the jeeva he attains to when he obtains perfection anyway. So then he is a mukya jeev. So by the bhagya jeev becomes the mukya jeev. So there, you know, you have this overlap like that. So you can say the nature of the living entity, the conditioned soul, the liberated soul. You can say it that way. Or you can say the liberated soul, because that's the natural nature of the jiva, the conditioned soul and the fortunate soul. I mean, the soul who's come in contact with Krishna consciousness and now is advancing. Does that make sense? So this, the same three principles are there. It's just how you, which particular thing you're trying to bring out. So now he's bringing out his endeavor to become liberated and his fortune. All these devotional actions performed in whatever manner produce an impression in the form of desire for devotion. When the impression gradually grows, it attains the name of good fortune, sobhagya. With the advancement of this sobhagya, the attraction for material enjoyment weakens. When the material desires become very weak, the sobhagya, desire for devotion, becoming stronger, and transforms into faith by the association of devotees. This faith produces more association and bestows all success. Okay, so a devotional action produces an impression, or in other words, samskar. This impression then, when they, in other words, if you, this impression, you do something devotional and you appreciated that, it will then create the desire to perform more devotional activity. Then when this grows, then then you call this good fortune. And that then, material enjoyment weakens, you take up the association of devotees, right? And then that takes up faith, right? Then that association of devotees becomes very strong. Right. So in being in that position of association of devotees, then we obtain all success. Right? Does that make sense? So by the grace of the devotees, you come in contact with devotional service that creates this good fortune. When that increases enough, then you develop faith and you take up the association of devotees. In that association, you continue that, then you obtain all success. It means you'll take up the devotional process, you become fixed in that process, develop a taste for that process, develop an attachment for that, and come to the point of bhava and then prema. Does that make sense? So it's all hinges technically on the association of devotees. When you know you're associating with devotees, then that's devotional service. When you don't know, that's called agyata sukriti, right? Which is fortune. But when that increases, that becomes great fortune or subhagya. Does that make sense? So the steps in the creation of subhagya for the jiva may be studied from the life story of Narada. In the Bhagavatam, it says, O Muni, in the last millennium, I was born as the son of a certain maidservant, engaged in the service of brahmanas who were following the principles of Vedanta. When they were living together during the 4 months of the rainy season, I was engaged in their personal service. Once only by their permission, I took the remnants of their food, and by doing so, all my sins were at once eradicated. Thus being engaged, I became purified in heart. And at that time, the very nature of the transcendentalist became attractive to me. Vyasadeva, in that association by the mercy of those great Vedantists, I could hear them describe the attractive activities of Lord Krishna. And thus, listening attentively, my taste for hearing of the personality of Godhead increased at every step. And so, O Brahmana, Vyasadeva, in due course of time, I, who was fully absorbed in thinking of Krishna, and who therefore had no attachments, being completely free from all material taints, met with death, as lightning and illumination occur simultaneously. Having been awarded a transcendental body, benefiting and associated with the personality of Godhead, I quit the body made of five material elements, and thus all acquired fruitive results of work stopped. The conclusion is this: when bhagya arises from many births of sukritis, faith also arises through association of devotees. From this faith arises devotional action, clearance of material desires, steadiness, taste, attachment, and attraction for Krishna. Where bhagya appears in a person's life, faith also is seen. Therefore, faith and association of devotees is the root of all auspiciousness. Okay. So then he's saying is that he was born in this particular family, and that in this family he was engaged in the association or the service of the Bhaktivedantas. So then in that association, then, taking their prasad, hearing, and then he become freed from all sin. Then in that, then taking up hearing, about the Lord's glories, he developed an attraction for these glories. Right? And so then that grew. So with that, then it came to the point, in due course of time, he was fully absorbed in thinking of Krishna, and he had no attachments. And then free from all material desires, then he left this body and was immediately situated on the spiritual platform. And here it says, as lightning and illumination occur simultaneously. So that's how one leaves this body and obtains the spiritual form. Right? So you don't have all this going to Yamaraj and hearing a whole list of things and this and that, and then working it out. Okay, so then, does that make sense? So he came to the transcendental platform. So then he's saying that from many births of these sukritis, then faith develops. You take up that association, and from that association, then it goes through all these natural stages till you come to the platform of prema. So he's saying faith and association of devotees is the root of all auspiciousness. Right? So by performing the devotional activities comes faith. By associating with the devotees, then that faith deepens. And then that takes us to coming to the platform of prema. So the association of devotees, that faith in devotees, devotional process, these can't be given up. These are given up, then how is it going to work? Because here it's said that they're the root of all auspiciousness. So if the root's not there, a tree never grows. Does that make sense? Okay. Something?
I think you've said before that a measure of the offenses or reactions is that you get taken away from devotional service. You just you don't have that association.
Yeah, you lose the association. You don't have the taste for it. Like that. So that's why you have to be very careful. That's why offenses to the devotees is considered the most difficult, because that will take you away. Because your saubhagya is coming from the devotees anyway. So if you don't appreciate the devotees, then that means your sukriti won't be happening. And that further development of faith and drive in Krishna consciousness won't be there either. So what do you have? What's the basis for Krishna consciousness to go on? Right? So therefore it'll go away. Because the process starts because of devotees, it's nourished because of devotees. Right? So association of devotees, but without faith, what's the use? Right? But that faith is also coming from those devotees. So one has to be very careful to see that nicely and take that seriously. Otherwise, if the association of devotees isn't proper, then that leads to all kinds of difficulties. Yes. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Yes.
I heard someone saying, I appreciate the association of devotees, but the devotees from the books like Bhagavatam.
Yes, that's nice, but then go to the Himalayas. You know what I'm saying? Because if you're going to function in the world, you have to be able to somehow or another appreciate to some degree. If you don't appreciate the devotees, so you don't associate with the devotees, you will be associating with the karmis. And if you don't appreciate them, you're not going to get anywhere. Just like you won't get anywhere in devotional life by not appreciating the devotees, you won't get anywhere in material life without appreciating the karmis. Right? If you don't deal properly with your boss and other people that you have to live with, your material life doesn't happen. So in any case, appreciation must be there. So it's just a matter of understanding, as we were discussing before, these elements of appreciation and what platform to run this appreciation from. Right? Because they may not be necessarily so skilled in different things or all that, but still, the basis of, you know, their being in Krishna consciousness, that has to be appreciated. Does that make sense? So the more you can appreciate, then the less difficulties you have. It doesn't mean you're not intelligent. You also understand if they have qualities that aren't very much appreciable. Those ones you avoid and only stick to the aspects that can be appreciated. Does that make sense? Like the person, his motive is to please Krishna, but the method he used is completely wrong. So therefore you appreciate the motive, but the method he used, you completely avoid. Because it's not going to be very useful. You can't say, well, because he's sincere, you know, therefore we'll use the same method. He was very sincere in cooking lunch, but he doesn't know cooking, so he burnt everything. So therefore now we make the standard that you have to burn everything. No, it's a matter of you avoid that. But that someone has a drive, wants to do, that you appreciate. Then stick to that. Keep that aspect, get rid of the rest. Is that okay? Something else? There is a karika in this connection. The subtle and gross bodies bind the jiva in a cage. In this situation, the jiva is always lamenting. Sometimes, through good fortune, he is released from bondage by the association of the devotees. The jiva has two conditions, in bondage and liberation. Giving up false conditions and becoming situated in one's real condition is called mukti or liberation. There is no doubt that, with liberation, suffering ceases and bliss is obtained. Right? So through the subtle and gross, we're bound. Right? And in that situation, you will always be unhappy. But by good fortune, sometimes he's released from this, and then by the association of devotees. Right? So that we see it comes back to this. So when one attains the liberated platform, one should not be in doubt that suffering will not go. Right? One will be freed from suffering. That's why it's called Vaikuntha. Right? There's no suffering. So that we should be convinced of. So if we're, any lamentation is there, that's because of material consideration. Does that make sense? Okay. When the jiva looks towards the Supreme Lord, worthy of his worship, his lamentation disappears and he attains glory as a servant of Krishna. Svetasvatara Upanishad 4.7. Okay, so that means when you can look towards the Lord, in other words, connect everything to the Lord, then all your problems go away. And then he becomes established as the Lord's servant. Liberation and bondage are the two states of the jiva. Liberated jivas are of two types: eternally liberated, nitya mukta, and liberated from maya, maya mukta. The eternally liberated jivas are never bound by maya. The maya muktas, first having entered maya, later enter the spiritual pastimes after being liberated from maya by association of devotees. What is the form of the jiva in liberation? So we understand you have the nitya mukta and the maya mukta. Right? So in either case, then he becomes situated in the Lord's pastimes. What is the form of the jiva in liberation? Some say that the jiva's liberation is the absolute cessation of misery. Some say it is merging with the Lord or Brahman. However, those who are wise say, liberation means being situated in one's eternal original form, which he attains after giving up the changeable gross and subtle body. Srimad Bhagavatam 2.10.6. Okay, does that make sense? So some are saying you get rid of all material distress. That's liberation. The other is that you're going to merge into the Lord, right? Or into the Brahman, some aspect like that. Then that Brahmananda, that will be your happiness. But those who are actually know what's going on, they know that it means when you establish yourself in your eternal relationship with Krishna, that's liberation, right? Because that'll be eternal. The other ones aren't. Like that. The jiva is a spiritual form, the pure servant of Krishna. Entrance into maya is a distortion of his form. When he rejects maya and becomes situated in his true form, that state is called mukti, or liberation. When knowledge of his true form becomes extremely indefinite, he has a tendency to merge into the Lord. And when the knowledge of his form is clear, he attains the status of a pure servant of Krishna. Liberation is not merely the cessation of all miseries, but the attainment of spiritual bliss along with the cessation of miseries. Right? So in other words, some say it's just removal of material pain, but it's you remove that, but you get spiritual bliss. Right? The happiness of interacting with the Lord. And as a side thing, then the material goes away. So that's why then, you know, Haridas Thakur is making the point is that by becoming Krishna conscious, then liberation comes automatically. It's a side thing. You know what I'm saying? So it comes automatically, right? Does that make sense? You have the rice, you also get the dal and sabji. You understand? The meal is the rice, right? And the dal and sabji comes with it. Does that make sense? No? Right? Or the meal is the bread, and with the bread comes something, some butter or something else is put on top. Right? Or you have your pasta. The pasta is the meal, and then you put something on the pasta so it makes it edible. Does that make sense? So it comes automatically. It's not separate. So therefore, why define it on its lower level? Because the higher level already includes the lower, but the lower doesn't include the higher. The characteristics of liberation are mentioned in Chandogya Upanishad. Having attained liberation, giving up the gross and subtle bodies, the jiva becomes equipped with a spiritual effulgent form. He is a spiritual person. In the spiritual world, he eats, plays, and becomes absorbed in bliss. Chandogya Upanishad 8.12.3. According to the Vedas, this is the ultimate liberation. The Chandogya Upanishad also described the eight qualities attained by the jiva in liberation. The jiva is without sin, or free from relation with sin and ignorance, free from old age, being ever young. He is deathless, never leaving his spiritual body. He is peaceful, being free from lamentation, suffering, and craving. He is devoid of desire for enjoyment. He is without thirst, and no desire other than to serve the Lord. He has only desires to serve the Lord favorably. Whatever desires he has are fulfilled. Chandogya Upanishad 8.7.1. Okay, so then today is Monday, right? So we'll continue tomorrow with, go back and revisit these 8 points, and then that will bring us basically to the end of this chapter. Okay. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, yeah. Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, yeah. Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandi.
Knowledge or proper understanding of what is jiva, what is Krishna, what is chitta, chitti, Ishvara, and we can see that in other sampradayas, like for example Madhvas, they do not accept that some jivas can be, they propose that some jivas can be liberated.
So what do we care?
I mean, in this sense, how do they achieve liberation? I mean,
in their ideas, they don't worry about those jivas because they never do. They only worry about the jivas and the mode of goodness, and you don't have to preach, they're going to come forward anyway because they're in the mode of goodness, they'll come to find you. That's why you don't see Madhvas out doing a lot of preaching.
So,
you understand? But these are tattva bodies. These aren't necessarily Madhva as he gave it.
But they're claiming that it was given by Madhva.
They'll claim so many things, but why did Lord Chaitanya not accept, even though he accepted the Sampradaya? He accepts the Sampradaya, but isn't too impressed by the tattva bodies.
Okay. Even if they have such, can we say that they have imperfect knowledge about them?
They have enough knowledge to get themselves to Vaikuntha, but we're not trying to get to Vaikuntha.
Okay.